This is 91.3 FM KUAF in Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. It's 6 minutes after 12, and this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On today's program, Community Services Clearinghouse in Fort Smith celebrates its 40th year of serving the community with an open house. And our militant grammarian is back with a discussion of misused words and phrases that have been used so often they're accepted as correct. Those stories are coming up later this hour. Coming up after Ozarks at Large, it's NPR's Here and Now. Today, a new exhibit tells the story of the Auschwitz concentration camp through rare artifacts, including a child's shoe with a sock neatly rolled inside. That's next time on Here and Now. Listen from 1 to 3 o'clock this afternoon on KUAF 91.3. It's Pint Night at Pack Rat Outdoor Center tonight. This event, which begins at 5:30, supports the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association. There will be food from Farrell's Lounge Bar and Grill, beer from Fossil Cove Brewing Company, treats from Petal Pops, and music from the Matt Smith Trio. Fat Tire Bike Shop will also be providing bike tune-ups. Admission is $10 for adults 21 and up, $5 for ages 5 to 20, and kids under 5 get in for free. More information is available at packratoc.com. U.S. Veterans Affairs Secretary Robert Wilkie is deploying several major reforms to the U.S. Veterans Health Administration, America's largest integrated healthcare system. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich was invited to interview Secretary Wilkie by phone, who laid out his framework, and she has this report.
The Veterans Health Administration operates 1,250 healthcare facilities, more than 170 medical centers, and more than 1,000 outpatient clinics, serving 9 million enrolled veterans each year. Of more than 18 million veterans nationwide, to provide more healthcare to more veterans, including more choices, on June 6th, USVA Secretary Robert Wilkie will deploy the VA Mission Act, which expands veteran access to community health care.
It is not me handing a veteran a card and saying, go out in the private sector and prosper. What it does say is that if VA cannot provide a particular medical service in a timely manner, then that veteran has the option to go into the private sector to seek that, where the medical professional at the VA clinic hospital will sit down with the veteran and discuss what options are available in the private sector.
Along with the John McClellan Memorial Veterans Hospital on West 7th Street in Little Rock, the Eugene Tobin Healthcare Center in North Little Rock, and the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks, 16 outpatient VA clinics operate across Arkansas. But with more aging Vietnam veterans seeking health care, along with returning Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, VA medical appointment wait times across the country remain high. The Mission Act, which won major bipartisan congressional support last year, Wilkie says will provide more funding to the VA's Choice Program for private care while consolidating the VA's 7 community care programs.
So that there is one standard for everyone participating in the Veterans Health Network. We've let the contracts out on all of the regions in the continental United States, and those should be in effect on June 6th.
The Act also modernizes and realigns the VA's massive medical infrastructure, working to recruit and retain more medical providers. Robert Wilkie was nominated by President Trump to serve as the 10th Secretary of Veterans Affairs, sworn in last July. The son of an Army artillery commander with roots in Arkansas, Wilkie spent his youth at Fort Bragg. He's a colonel in the Air Force Reserve, previously serving in the U.S. Navy Reserve with Joint Forces Intelligence Command, Naval Special Warfare Group 2, and the Office of Naval Intelligence, according to his online biography. During the George W. Bush administration, Wilkie was the youngest senior leader in the Department of Defense, working in both national and international security affairs. Another VA reform Wilkie is undertaking is increasing accountability for employees and protecting informants.
We have three mechanisms when it comes to reporting bad conduct. One is the general legal track, the general counsel. The other is with the inspector general. And the third is with the Office of accountability and whistleblower protection. Nobody else has that.
Which, Wilkie says, could have prevented, for example, a pathologist caught working while impaired at Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks last year, a system which routinely gets high marks in reviews. That case is under federal investigation and intervention.
What we have initiated as a result of what happened in Fayetteville is we've brought over the Air Force's senior human resources team and had them revamp the way we approach not only the people within our system, but also how they are accountable. And we're instituting the VA version of what we in the Air Force, and I'm an Air Force reservist, called Just Culture.
According to VHA National Center for Patient Safety, the Just and Fair Culture Initiative works to identify and examine internal weaknesses and allow employees to feel safe and protected when voicing concerns.
So what's going to be happening in Fayetteville is that every one of the sections will meet every day, go over the previous day's work, evaluate what's going on, review it, put in suggestions for change. If there are problems, they are now fully capable of reporting what they see.
The Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks and other VAs expect a sharp rise in women veterans seeking health care in the coming years, which Secretary Wilkie says he's prepared to meet.
10% of the veterans in the Department of Veterans Affairs are women. When I presented our budget to the Congress last week or week before last, I pointed out that about 10% of our medical budget, and our medical budget, it's about $90 billion, goes to women.
A recent anonymous Pentagon survey on sexual assault in the military reveals more than 20,000 service members, 13,000 women, and 7,500 men reported experiencing some type of sexual assault. When discharged from duty, they, along with veterans who experience combat trauma, may or may not seek out mental health care. But Wilkie says the VA is no longer taking chances.
Anyone who comes to VA now gets an automatic mental health screening. We also provide the automatic screening for everyone, women and men, when it comes to investigating their term of service regarding potential sexual trauma. We're also going back and relooking at thousands of cases that this department reviewed in the past that we believe were not adequately reviewed because of the standards and prejudices in place at that time.
And the VA, Wilkie says, is providing mental health care to veterans not previously qualified.
Recognizing that society has changed in terms of what it expects from us and what it expects us to do when it comes to those who serve. Those who have other than honorable discharges are eligible for VA care.
On March 5th, President Trump signed the President's Roadmap to Empower Veterans and End a National Tragedy of Suicide, PREVENT for short.
This is our number one clinical priority, and we're moving out aggressively, but I do believe that we have to have a national conversation
to quell what Secretary Wilkie describes as a national crisis. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The 19th annual Art of Wine Festival presents Uncorked Wine Tasting, Friday, May 17th at 7 p.m. This summer social party offers over 800 assorted wines, beer, spirits, local food, plus live music and art. A limited number of tickets available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Fayetteville National Cemetery will observe Memorial Day later this month with a series of events. Steve Gray has been helping organize the Memorial Day events for years, and he says the holiday is always special.
Doesn't matter whether it rains or not. We always do it. One of the most emotional ones we had was 3 years ago, and it rained like crazy, and we did it underneath the committal area. And the British Bass Band said, "We will play if somebody hold our music." So the picture in the newspaper the next day are these little Boy Scouts holding the music for them. And so it's really a treat. We bring in about 600-800 people all in one location at one time. We encourage people to come visit that cemetery, whether they have anybody interred there or not.
On Saturday, May 25th, volunteers will plant small American flags at each gravesite in the cemetery. He says on May 27th, Memorial Day, the observation begins with what has become a tradition at the cemetery.
We're going to be reading the names of those interred this last year, about 500 or so. And then we're going to go through a pretty much a traditional kind of service. We'll have a guest speaker. They'll do a patriotic song. They'll do the national anthem, the service songs. And then the pipers, they're always there, our Highland pipe band. They're just awesome. They're going to do Amazing Grace and some other songs as well. We'll have Post 29 from Siloam Springs do a flag folding ceremony. We'll talk about what those folds mean.
The singing ensemble, the Dazzling Diamonds, will also perform on Memorial Day. People interested in volunteering to plant flags on Saturday the 25th can show up at the cemetery that morning at 9 a.m. Tomorrow afternoon, Community Services Clearinghouse will celebrate its 40th anniversary with an open house. Tammy Coons, Director of Operations, spoke with me by phone yesterday and shared the history of this Fort Smith-based nonprofit.
This year, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. The Clearinghouse has been around for 40 years now, and the backpack program has actually been around for 30 as of August. The Clearinghouse itself we do a lot of referral programs where we can tell clients about other agencies and stuff that can help. We also have an on-site food pantry, and we serve over 400 families a month out of our food pantry. We help mainly the elderly and disabled and cancer support clients that are going through treatment at that time. Through our backpack program, we serve around 2,400 kids in a 7-county area. We do 2 in Oklahoma, LaFleur and Sequoia, and we do 5 in Arkansas, which are Sebastian, Crawford, Logan, Scott, and Franklin. In that, they get around 9 to 10 items that go home with them each Friday to help them through the weekend. Kids that go without food over the weekend, it takes usually Monday and Tuesday of breakfast and lunch to get back to being able to learn. So they lose about 40% of their education when they're not able to eat over the weekend. 1 out of every 6 children do not know where their next meal is coming from, and that's why doing the backpack program is so important.
And was there any particular event that prompted the founders to create this organization all those years ago?
Well, the Clearinghouse originally got started with some churches and stuff getting together, needing one place to get all the information and to be able to have the clearinghouse to be able to serve multiple people without people going to the same, you know, hitting all of them at one time. And so it was just kind of a center point, and then it's just kind of grown from there.
And you'll be hosting an open house on Thursday to help mark that 40th anniversary. What can people expect from attending this event?
We'll have, you know, cake and punch, and we have some dignitaries coming in to do a talk, and we're just going to celebrate the Clearinghouse for the 40 years and the work that they've done in this area. They are a big part of this community, and, you know, we can't make this possible without the over 400 volunteers that we have every month. And it's just going to be a great day to celebrate the work done from the Clearinghouse.
If people are looking for services, do they need to make an appointment to come see you, or can they just drop by during your hours?
Yeah, we're open to clients Monday through Friday from 8 to 3:30. We do have some qualifications, paperwork that you have to bring in. That's, you know, proof of income, proof of address, social security cards, and photo ID. If we're not able to help them here, we're able to, you know, refer them somewhere else that would best fit their needs.
As someone in the community that may want to help support your organization, either by volunteering or by donating, what are some things that I can do? How can I help you out?
You can go to our website and make a monetary donation. If you have items that you would like to donate or have done a food drive that you would like to donate, you can call us and we can either pick it up or you can drop it off at our address at 4420 Wheeler Avenue. If you're interested in doing one and you just don't know what to do, give us a call. You can talk to either me or Patty West, which is marketing director, and we're able to help you get that set up. Like I said, you can go to the website and do a monetary donation, or you can just stop by here. We're willing to give a tour and explain more about our program anytime they want to come by.
What's the importance of having a place like yours that is a clearinghouse for lots of information for people in need?
Well, some people just don't know where to start. You know, the situations come up on them, and they just don't know what to do. And we're able to, you know, look at the situation, decide what assistance they can get and where to send them to. You know, not always is it what we can do for them here. It may be what else we can tell them where to go to. And they just, it's a starting point to get that assistance that they're in need for at that time.
That was Tammy Coons, Director of Operations for Community Services Clearinghouse. She spoke with me by phone yesterday. The 40th anniversary celebration begins at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at 4420 Wheeler Avenue in Fort Smith. Visitors can drop in anytime between 1 and 3. A program featuring comments from the mayor of Fort Smith begins at 1:30. Cake and refreshments will be served and tours will be offered. More information is available at csclearinghouse.org.
KUAF is giving away tickets to the 2019 Rocklahoma Music Festival, held Memorial Day weekend, May 25th through the 27th in Pryor, Oklahoma. Hosted by Eddie Truck, over 60 acts will perform, including Korn, In This Moment, Asking Alexandria, and Seven Dust. Winners will be announced Friday, May 17th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Information and registration available at KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The Bentonville Film Festival is beginning its movie screenings today. One of the films that will be shown this week focuses on an extreme athlete who started filming his own recovery after suffering a major spinal cord injury doing what he loves.
There's a chance that he's not going to walk again.
I have to be the rock.
Everybody thinks there's no hope. I truly believe there is.
That's a clip from the trailer of the documentary that follows the recovery of Paul Basagoitia. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek spoke with Paul yesterday and began their conversation by asking what it was like to turn his new reality into a documentary.
Let's start by talking about Red Bull Rampage. How would you describe that event to someone who's never seen it?
The Red Bull Rampage is, I would say, it's probably one of the most extreme events that happens in action sports. You know, here we are at the highest peak in the southern Utah desert, and essentially, we are riding down our bike, riding down the cliffs with our bikes with no maintenance on the trails whatsoever. And as an athlete, you get to choose your line from the top all the way to the bottom while you have a helicopter chasing you and filming this whole situation.
That event, Red Bull Rampage, is also the place where you sustained your spinal cord injury. After you were injured, what made you pick up a camera and start recording your progress?
Yeah, so I sustained a spinal cord injury 2015 at the Red Bull Rampage. I ended up burst fracturing my T12 vertebrae, and I got kerfooted directly from the event straight to the hospital and straight into a 10.5-hour surgery. I remember waking up in ICU, and I was just devastated. Like, I couldn't move anything from my waist down, and I think day two, I was looking at the popcorn ceiling. I was depressed. I was like, oh my gosh, this is my new life. Like, what am I going to do? Like, get me out of this hospital. I just want to go home. And I knew I was going to spend some time there. And I was looking at the table, and there was my brand new camera that I literally bought a week before my injury. And I was like, man, this is no better time to start learning how to operate that camera. So I think I was shooting maybe around day two, day three of my recovery.
And how often did you film yourself?
I was pretty much doing it every day, maybe a couple of times a day. Like I said, it was just a way to kill time in the hospital. Like, if anyone's ever spent weeks or months at a hospital, it gets kind of depressing. And the best way to, you know, spend your time in hospitals is try to stay busy. So I was always documenting my progress from from the morning to the evening, every single day.
So how much of this documentary is made up of the clips you filmed yourself?
Funny, I was having this conversation the other day. I think it's about, I want to say almost half the film is shot with just me. Just me, you know, putting the camera on a tripod, hitting record, doing my thing.
So eventually Red Bull Media House gets involved and your documentation of your progress changes into producing this full-length documentary. How did that all happen?
I think about a month into my recovery, I started started researching spinal cord injury and seeing what exactly was out there as far as notes and, steps to get better. And there was nothing really out there. It was kind of a blank page. I was like, man, this is so crazy. There's no really education whatsoever with this injury. So I thought it was really important to start shooting. You know, every day I was shooting, and then coming to find out I was overcoming this another obstacle of as far as like a struggle, and I had no idea this even happened with spinal cord injury. And at this whole time, a buddy of mine, Aaron Lutzi, who works for Red Bull, knew exactly what I was documenting, and he was kind of learning with me about this whole situation. And then about 1 year into the injury, he was like, man, how do you feel if we come on board and help tell your story? You know, he knew that I was already documenting everything. He knew I was going to make maybe like a small little, like, I don't know, YouTube video or something. And he's like, I think we need to, you know, tell the world, and with our backing, I think we can bring way more awareness. And I was absolutely stoked that he even mentioned that. And we got a whole full-on production crew, from a producer, director, a full-time filmer, and a sound guy.
What was that like for you, having a film crew around all the time?
It was a bit stressful, you know, like here you are living your worst nightmare, and you have a whole production crew just following you day by day. And it was a little stressful, and at times I kind of just wish like everybody was gone. But we had a really good team, and it became really good friends with the videographer and the rest of the crew. So I think it was really important to choose the right people documenting this type of situation. And over time it just kind of became second nature. Like I felt like I didn't even notice them at times.
And there are other people in this documentary as well who have had spinal cord injuries. How did that fall into place? How did they become part of your story?
They were approached by Red Bull to see if they wanted to be involved with this film. And, you know, we wanted to include other people that were living with the situation on a daily basis, because the title of the film is called Any One of Us. And, when you see my situation, you're kind of like, well, it was kind of bound to happen, because he's an extreme guy. He was doing backflips on his mountain bike. Like, of course that was bound to happen, right? And these other people that are in the film, they have no involvement with action sports. You know, there are so many people in this film that just, you know, whether they slipped on some black ice, they dove into a swimming pool, car accidents. You know, the number one cause of spinal cord injury is actually car accidents. And we thought it was really important to get other people involved with this film that had nothing to do with action sports. And I'm so happy that we did. And, you know, a lot of these other people that are in the film, I actually became really good friends. I would consider some of them even my best friends now. And it's just so awesome that they opened up about their own situation.
So what did it feel like to watch this documentary once all these pieces had been put together?
It was tough, actually. You know, it was really tough. And still today, I can't watch the first 30 minutes of the film. But the very first time I watched the film, I'm not going to lie, a couple tears were coming out of my eyes. And it was just tough, because it brought back some awful memories that I had to deal with.
Is there any part of this documentary, because it is so personal, that you are nervous to show a wider audience?
I mean, I think I definitely exposed myself pretty heavily in the beginning of this film, maybe to a point that maybe it was too much. But you know what? I came in as executive producer in this documentary, and I had full control of pulling any segment out of the film. And I almost did pull this scene out. But here I am trying to make a documentary about spinal cord injuries and what actually entails, what actually goes into it. And if I didn't show 100% of the things that actually go to this injury, I feel like I would have sent the wrong messaging out. So I would say the early stages of my injury, but at the same time, it had to be done, and it had to be shot, and it had to be still in the film to bring awareness to this injury, because the whole purpose of this film is to bring awareness to this injury. And what's really cool, what Rebel Media House is doing, is all proceeds from this film is going directly into Wings for Life, a foundation to find a cure for paralysis.
Where are you today in your recovery? What's your kind of day-to-day at this point in time, you know, 3 years on?
Yeah. So we are three and a half years into my recovery. And where I'm at right now is I'm able to walk with a cane. And so blessed to be able to do that because, you know, being told I was going to be in a wheelchair my whole life to now be able to walk with a cane is a true, true blessing. But I still dealing with a lot of paralysis, especially on my right side. I still have no movement whatsoever or sensation below my knees, and I'm still having issues getting some of my major muscle groups to fire back up. But it's enough muscle groups for me to go and pedal a bike still.
And it's an e-bike, right? An electronic bike?
Yes. Yeah, best thing that's ever happened.
So what was that like to be able to get back on a bike for the first time?
It was the most uncomfortable thing / best feeling ever. I remember the first day when I got back on the bike, I was right when I put my feet on the pedals, I was so lost because I can't feel my feet. And it was so weird being on the bike and not being able to feel the pedals that I had to keep looking at the pedals to make sure my feet weren't falling off. But then when I got momentum, it was like the best feeling ever to feel the wind slap your face, you know. So it was like a weird situation. It felt super uncomfortable in the beginning, but once I started getting some momentum and feeling the wind in my face, it was the best feeling ever.
So what are you kind of hoping as you look at the future? What are your plans at this point?
Well, as far as the film, you know, I hope this film can raise tons of money to find a cure for paralysis. I hope it can help somebody with their situation, whether it's a, you know, whether it's a spinal cord injury or whatever adversity that someone's facing. And as far as me as personally, you know, I just want to continue helping people in this field and, you know, obviously still be active in the bike community, right? Like two wheels is all I knew in my whole life. So I still want to be involved with the bike world.
I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but what drives you to do something like the Red Bull Rampage, where you are literally laying everything on the line to compete in an event like this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's one simple answer. I think I was born like this. You know, I was competing at bike racing when I was 6 years old, and I kind of just continued on living like that. It was something that it was the only thing I knew, and the satisfaction of actually winning an event or achieving a huge goal is amazing feeling. It's a bit of a drug, you know, like getting that rush, getting that that title, whatever you're chasing. And when you do accomplish that, it's one of the best feelings ever.
So I'm not sure if worth it is the right phrase to use here, but you know, all your riding, Red Bull Rampage, everything you've done up until this point, was it worthwhile, even though you suffered this life-changing injury that totally changed the direction you were going?
For me, absolutely. You know, it's given me the freedom to travel the world. I met some of my best friends through the bicycle. I lived every kid's dream, right? And still today, even though I did sustain a life-altering injury, I'm still able to continue a good life.
I appreciate you taking the time, and I hope you have a great time in Bentonville.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for your time.
That was professional mountain biker Paul Basagoccia speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek about his documentary, Any One of Us. The film will be screened at 3:15 Friday afternoon at the Skylight Theater in downtown Bentonville. More information is available at BentonvilleFilmFestival.com.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Poem for My Love by June Jordan. How do we come to be here next to each other in the night? Where are the stars that show us to our love inevitable? Outside, the leaves flame usual in darkness and the rain falls cool and blessed on the holy flesh. The black men waiting on the corner for a womanly mirage. I am amazed by peace. It is the possibility of you asleep and breathing in the quiet air. June Jordan was born on July 9, 1936, to Granville Ivanhoe and Mildred Maud Fisher Jordan. Both of her parents were Jamaican immigrants. The family moved to Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, when a young June Jordan was six, and the transition did not come without its challenges. Jordan's father was physically abusive, which pushed her deeper into her poetry and literature. In future writings, she would reflect on how the abuse from her father was her introduction to the literary arts. Jordan attended Millwood High School in Brooklyn, where she was the only Black student among 3,000 students. She would transfer and graduate from Northfield School for Girls in 1953. In the fall of 1953, Jordan would enroll at Barnard College. However, 2 years into her collegiate career, she would meet Michael Meyer, a white graduate student who Jordan would marry. The newlyweds would move to Chicago, where Meyer was a graduate student in anthropology, and have a son named Christopher David Meyer. Unfortunately, the couple would divorce after 11 years, leaving Jordan to face the life of a single parent. Despite the challenges, she maintained a commitment to her writing. In the 1960s, Jordan dived into the civil rights movement and joined busloads of interracial Americans on the freedom rides. Jordan would also be a part of a production team for the 1963 documentary, The Cool World. The documentary explored how environmental changes could impact Black families in her native New York. Jordan would go on to write her first book of poetry in 1969, entitled Look at Me. And the following year, she would serve as editor on a text filled with African-American poetry from children called Soul Script, a collection of African-American poetry. She also served as a committed environmentalist who wrote texts devoted to reflection and awareness of a movement for all ages. In 1967, June Jordan would become a professor at City College and Sarah Lawrence, both schools in her home state, New York. However, in 1989, Jordan would take her brilliance to the West Coast and become a professor in African American Studies at UC Berkeley. She also founded the Poetry for the People program. Throughout her life, Jordan authored 28 texts and won numerous awards. Sadly, on June 24, 2002, June Jordan's life of activism and light would end from breast cancer. Her 28th text, Some of Us Did Not Die, was published posthumously. Today, we celebrate the incredible life of the inspiring, the poetic, the beautiful June Jordan.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville, Arkansas. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can learn more about the series online at KUAF.com. Just search for Reflections in Black.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and I have gone to the Harold and Blanche Calk News Studio to speak with Timothy Dennis. Hello.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
You've got a little bit longer walk than Kyle does.
A little bit longer. I got two doors, not just one. I need my steps, though. It's fine.
Okay, so it is Wednesday.
So music.
Yes.
I'm already looking forward to the weekend. Tell me about it.
Okay, let's start with tomorrow night.
Okay.
Backspace in Fayetteville is going to have one heck of a bill. They're going to have ambient rock, indie rock, psychedelic rock, and electro jazz. On the bill are bands Dub Pivo, Chinua, Summers, Elephanton, and Honey Collective.
I love how eclectic that space is with their performers. It's so fun.
Yeah. They're asking for a $5 donation at the door for that show. It begins at 8 p.m. tomorrow night. Again, that's Backspace in Fayetteville. Moving on to Friday night, Becky Adams is going to be at Kingfish.
You know Becky.
I do. I actually had her in the studio a couple months ago. We'll hear more from that session on Friday's Ozarks at Large.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a local singer-songwriter. She has an incredible voice, and she actually performs with members of Honey Collective.
Okay.
I wanna be the one you see when the lights fade. when the lights fade. I wanna be the only one that takes you out, babe. Takes you out, babe, here.
That show at Kingfish starts at 8 o'clock Friday night. Also happening in Fayetteville Friday night, Dixon Street Pub is going to have a band by the name of Layers of Pink.
I have not heard of them.
They are kind of a pop rock band with apocalyptic themes. Yeah, it should be interesting. That show at Dixon Street Pub starts at 8:30 Friday night. Moving up the road to Springdale, Melody Pond is going to be at Black Apple Crossing.
Yes, local favorites.
Local favorites, Candy Lee and Emily Rowland. They have fantastic duets, fantastic harmonies. That show at Black Apple Crossing gets underway at 8 p.m. If you can't see them Friday night at Black Apple Crossing, they're also playing Saturday night at 8 at Moonbreak Brewing Company in Rogers.
New venue I haven't been to yet. So.
I haven't either, but it's out at 117 West Walnut.
So right in downtown.
Exactly, exactly. Moving on to more shows Friday night, Willie Carlisle is going to be at the Nines in Bentonville.
I was born on the white prairie with its wheat so wild and strong. I left my home when I turned 21. Still don't know if I was wrong. 'Cause I know a girl down in southern Illinois has me tangled up like kudzu vines. One good look at her shining smile.
Willie, he's back in the area after a few months out on the road. If you can't see him at the Nines Friday night, he will also play Saturday night at 6:30 p.m. at Ozark Folkways in Winslow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so you've got a couple opportunities this weekend. That show at the Nines in Bentonville starts at 7 o'clock Friday night. Moving over to the east in Eureka Springs, Jackson Jennings 5 will be at Brews.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're a fantastic rock band. They call their sound a heartfelt heartland sound or traditional rock with a modern twist. I think that's pretty appropriate.
Oh, absolutely.
That show at Chelsea's gets underway at 7 o'clock Friday night. Now moving down to the south in Fort Smith, Temple Live is going to have Jason Boland and the Stragglers.
Awesome.
Fantastic red dirt country band hailing from Oklahoma.
When I look south to see the storm clouds roll on their way to old Mexico. I don't want to be alone. And the rays of light through a shiner box bottle make me want to turn the key and put down the throttle and get lost down 35.
Tickets for that show are $25 to $30. They increase $5 on Friday. That show gets underway at 8 p.m. Again, that's Temple Live in Fort Smith. Now, moving on to Saturday, Goose is going to be at George's Majestic Lounge. You've talked to them before.
I have talked to them. That duo has been around for a little bit. Maybe we should have them back in the studio. It's been a minute.
It's getting about that time. That show at George's gets underway at 9 o'clock Saturday night, has a $10 cover. Moving on to Johnson, Trash Can Bandits will be at Wright's Barbecue.
That's a fantastic name.
I just asked my friends for help. Oh, see the fireworks of petals in the spring. Oh, you know we never see the blooms if we never seen the rain.
They call their music Gypsy Pirate Blues. That show at Wright's Barbecue gets underway actually Saturday midday at 11:30 a.m.
Oh, I like that.
I do too. It's an
midday
early show.
Music. That's okay. I like my music midday.
Yeah, get some music, get some barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
More happenings on Saturday. Bike Rack Brewing Company is going to have a brew room session with Kaylin Fay and Tim Easton.
I love Kaylin Fay.
The other half of that bill, Tim Easton, he's a singer-songwriter who was born in upstate New York. He grew up in Tokyo and Akron, Ohio, but he traveled for 7 years around Europe and elsewhere and finally returned to the U.S. and eventually ended up in Nashville.
Let me be next to you, then we can watch the band. Let me be next to you, under your ceiling fan. I can hear every song better when I'm next to you. Now please don't pull.
That brew room session has a $10 cover. It'll get on our way at 7 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's Bike Rack Brewing Company in Bentonville. Moving down to the south again, the Flip Off Pirates are going to be at Harry's downtown.
Flip Off Pirates, they've been a standard around here for a while.
Oh yeah, and I mean, they're
years and years.
They're a group of seasoned players, you know, from all over the local music scene.
She was a girl with no remorse, and so of course she knew it all. She had no car, she had no cow, she had no roof, she had no wall. And so you see, she was so free to be any place that she felt called. She was young.
That show Saturday night at Harry's gets underway at 9 o'clock. It has a $5 cover. Now, moving on to Sunday, Mother's Day, there are a few different things happening. First of all, Fayetteville Public Library is going to have Baird Blaine and Friends.
And that's free.
It is free. It's part of the Mountain Street Stage Series. It gets underway at 2 o'clock. Also happening Sunday, mm-hmm. John Two Hawks is going to have a Mother's Day concert at The Odd.
There's an option. I need to make plans.
Yeah, and mothers get into that show for free.
Oh, I love that.
Everyone else pays $12 cover, gets underway at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
And then finally, also happening in Eureka Springs, Rebecca Paddock is going to be at Brews. If you're not familiar, she's one half of Buffalo Gals. She's one quarter of Sad Daddy. She's an incredible fiddler, instrumentalist, singer, and songwriter.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she is incredible. Go see her or anything else happening Sunday. That show at Brews gets underway at 2 p.m.
So plenty to do. That's just this weekend. I love that we have so much music here. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you.
Support for KUAF comes from Westwood Gardens, celebrating Mother's Day with hanging baskets, garden giftware, patio pots, and blooming roses at four locations in Northwest Arkansas. More information available at westwoodgardens.com. Additional support comes from Arvest Bank, offering a range of financial services, from checking accounts to loans, mortgages, and more. Arvest is member FDIC and equal housing lender. More information available online at arvest.com.
Our militant grammarian, Catherine Churlds, loves to examine words. This week, she talks to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about different ways words can be misused or misunderstood. She says this isn't the first time she's discussed the ways the English language can be confused.
You know, we've talked about several kinds of groupings of words, especially those that were heard wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I believe your favorite was the mondegreen.
Yes.
And what is a mondegreen?
Mondegreen is, help me out here, a mondegreen, didn't we talk about that with Christmas?
I think some of them were Christmassy, yeah. Yeah, like...
A misheard lyric or...
Mine from my childhood was the little George Jesus lay sleeping.
Yes.
Yeah. Or things like Chester drawers.
It's not Chester drawers.
It's chest of.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to say that you and I, the two word nerds, are going to discuss the difference between a mondegreen and an eggcorn.
Eggcorn.
Yes.
All right. Excellent. Eggcorn sounds like something you would drink at Christmas.
It does, doesn't it? Grammar Planet introduced me to the word egg corn, so let's talk a bit about what they are.
Can I ask how it's spelled?
Egg corn.
Just like it sounds.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm. And egg corn is a misheard word or phrase that retains the original meaning.
Okay.
So we'll get into some examples here.
All right.
Typically, the egg corn sounds very similar to the word or phrase it's substituting and can even seem to make sense, which is why they cause confusion.
Yeah.
For instance, moot point. That's a moot point. Or mute point.
Right.
It's a mute point.
Right. And I can see, so it's moot.
Moot is the actual phrase.
Meaning
right.
that it's a point that has no
meaning. Has no application.
Bearing.
Yeah,
yes.
Bearing. Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm.
Mute, of course, means silent.
Yes.
So you could see where that would get confusing.
But you will hear a lot of people say that's a mute point.
The point is mute.
So I don't want you to talk about it anymore. I want you to be mute about it because it's yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Kyle, let's see if you can guess what the original phrase was in these egg corns.
Okay, you're going to give me the egg corn. I'm going to tell you what it
is should be.
Accidentally substituting for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Bold-faced lie.
Bald face lie.
Right.
But bold face makes so much sense.
Yes, right. And that's why it's an egg corn. Because, well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Chomp at the bit.
Chomp at the bit is the egg corn.
Right.
Champ at the bit.
Yes. Which is a word we never use except in that phrase.
Right. It's a horse term,
it's
right?
It's a horse. Yeah. The bit is in the horse's mouth. And champing, I think, is kind of like grinding on or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Doggy dog world.
Dog eat dog world?
Yeah. Doggy dog. For all intensive purposes.
Oh, my goodness. For all intents and purposes.
Yes. It's intents and purposes.
Right, but I hear intensive purposes often. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One in the same.
One and the same.
Yes.
But people will say one
in
the
same.
Same. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't even think I do
one
that.
In the same.
Yeah.
I bet I do, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the term egg corn is modern, actually. In 2003, a professor of linguistics named Jeffrey Pullum saw a discussion about a woman who had substituted the phrase egg corn for the word acorn.
Ah.
And so he suggested using that word, egg corn, as the name for similar word substitution. Now, before we get into the Mondegreen versus egg corn debate...
Yes.
It's worth noting that an egg corn differs from a malapropism.
And a malaprop, named after a fictional character, Miss Malaprop, is one when you substitute one word for the right word and it makes it sort of a silly sense.
Yeah, the nonsensical aspect of it is what really sets aside malapropism.
Right.
For instance, the proud mother might brag that her son is preposterous when she means prosperous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that would be funny, you know. With egg corns, however, the substitution has a similar meaning to the original word or phrase that actually makes some sort of sense.
Yes.
As to the difference between Mondegreens and egg corns, it's slim.
Yeah.
Slim difference. In my mind, it seems to come down to two things. Has it been accepted by the general public to the point that people really believe the distortion is correct?
Mm-hmm.
And does it come from popular music, film, TV, literature, et cetera? I think Mondegreen is kind of reserved for things that come from...
Pop culture.
Yeah, pop culture. The blogger who calls himself the Word Detective says the difference between a Mondegreen and an egg corn is that a Mondegreen is a mishearing specifically of a song lyric or poem that is usually restricted to one person at a time and doesn't spread far, if at all, before being corrected.
Right.
An egg corn is a substitution of the familiar for the unfamiliar that is close enough in meaning to the original to spread widely, to become widely used. The Word Detective says egg corns seem to be increasing in number, possibly because people writing on the web are using words and phrases they've heard but never seen in print.
Yep.
And that goes back to people don't read anymore.
Yes.
Identify this line from a 1973 song by John Fogerty. Uh-huh. There's a bathroom on the right.
There's a bad moon on the rise.
Bad moon on the rise. Well, the name is the song is Bad Moon Rising. Right. It's been misheard by listeners so often over the years that Fogerty has taken to puckishly including the bathroom line in his live performances of the song.
That's funny.
All right, Kyle. So
okay,
we got to decide which there's a bathroom on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an Eggcorn or a Mondegreen?
That'd be a Mondegreen.
Because it comes from a song?
What? No, because it's not the same meaning. Bathroom on the left means here's a bathroom. Bad moon on the rise means...
Right. But acorns don't necessarily mean the same thing.
Yeah.
But I'll take what you're saying. They're closer. They're kind of close to what...
Right. So I'd say it's a
really
Mondegreen.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Yeah.
The militant grammarian is Catherine Schurlds. She spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums.
The 14th annual Books in Bloom Literary Festival will take place Sunday, May 19th from noon to 5 p.m. at the 1886 Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs. The Carroll and Madison Public Library Foundation welcomes 16 authors, including Jeffrey Deaver, Lauren Wilkinson, Chris Bojelian, Wiley Cash, and Pete the Cat creator James Dean. The event is free and open to the public. Booksinbloom.org for more information.
Remember the really varied course load you had in school? There was biology, English, art, history, even art history. Well, the mix kept your day moving and your mind sharp. Because whether you're into statistics or Socrates, variety does your brain good. That's why Morning Edition gives you the latest news alongside stories that are just plain interesting. Stay sharp with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekday mornings from 5 until 9 on KUAF. This is 91.3 FM KUAF in Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Poteau, Oklahoma, a listener-supported service of the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors today included Kyle Kellums, Zuzana Sitek, Jacqueline Froelich, and Timothy Dennis, who also mastered our show. Additional content was provided by Raven Cook and Lee Wood. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. We'll end today with a song from Common Roots. It was recorded inside the Firman Garner Performance Studio. The duo will perform at Sassafras Springs Vineyard and Winery Saturday. You can find out more about the band at facebook.com/commonrootsband. Thanks again for listening, and enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.
Well, turn around, baby, and I'll call you. Of this war, but I look for better company with something to fight for. Thank you for the lesson that I didn't want to hear, but I have to go it alone to conquer my fear. All right, okay.